Hey guys, this is Cole Weicker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I
ball's gonna bounce down. It's free in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Rowdy's Kingdom, and welcome to another episode of the Unused Substitutes podcast. We are your green and gold gospel, your only source for year-round Rowdy's coverage. We are live on Radio St. Pete Online. We are part of the Beautiful Game Network and presented in part by Roughneck Scarves. My name is Stephen Cundiff. Joining me tonight, Matthew Cox. Sir?
Hello.
How are you doing this evening, my friend?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm doing a lot better than I was on Saturday evening.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, yeah. Saturday evening was pretty bad.
It's true.
I was not a fan.
Another game, another loss. Tampa Bay Rowdies are in for a bit of a weird stretch at the moment, as is usual this time of year. We want to thank our executive producer tonight, Adam Martin, as always. Thank you, sir, for being an executive live producer, Patreon supporter of the show. If you would like to be a Patreon supporter, please stick around. We do have a Patreon. You can find us on that website. We have it linked on our website as well. And that would be a great way to support the show. If you want to tweet us during the show or during the week, catch our thoughts, our comments, at Unused Subs Pod is the best way to do so. At underscore S underscore Cundiff is my Twitter handle. And Matt's, yours is at unsub underscore Matt.
Sure.
So the team went down to Miami. And for the second time ever has lost a game to Miami in a competitive match. And there were a lot of statements being made. There were a lot of comments being thrown. A lot of anger to be had. I happen to be there, so I know some of the stick that some of the people were giving people like Neil Collins. I don't know how much of it's justified. I honestly don't. The Rowdies come out in a different look, different formation, different personnel playing slightly different positions around the field than what we have been doing so far this season. And 10 minutes into the game, Connor Antley makes a catastrophic error. And the game gets put on its head.
I literally thought at that moment, and I tweeted it too, and then I was proven right. Now, maybe it was a self-fulfilling prophecy in the fact that because I tweeted it, it ended up happening. But I was like, man, we're finally going to end up getting featured on the when playing it out of the back goes wrong account. And I mean, like, not even 5 minutes later, there it is.
Oh, yeah. No, your tweet definitely notified them of to look out for what happened. And, yeah, that was That was an unfortunate moment in Rowdy's history. That didn't go very well. That was not a very good play. It's funny because I'm not even entirely sure what he was. I don't know if he just missed the pass to Jordan in general, or if it was an anticipation of Jordan's movement. Because the error was he passed the ball too far into the middle of the field, and Jordan like either couldn't get there or wasn't anticipating it, so his body was looking the wrong way. It was a very strange setup that led to that play. And I mean, good on the Miami guy. He's got a, you know, an eye for what's happening. He sees the error, he jumps all over it, and you know, bada bing, bada boom, they're up 1-0. But I don't know. It was just a funky moment to start a game in front of a couple hundred people. And you could tell that it, I mean, besides the fact that it was just a shocking event to begin with, I mean, it's going to throw off anybody as far as trying to get a rhythm, trying to get a game plan going, trying to figure out what you're going to do for that match with the new formation, with slightly new personnel. That's just going to throw anybody out of sync completely.
Yeah, going back to your point about whether it was a bad pass or whether he, you know, misread the target, I kind of wonder, because remember we talked about it after the Rowdies lost up there 2 weeks ago tonight, if the turf was having some kind of effect on, because passing wasn't great for either of the teams as far as completing passes and the pass accuracy. You know, I mean, kind of wonder if maybe that plays into it. Not 100% sure. But yeah, it just, so, and look, like the lineup, I guess makes perfect sense. The changes, like Seba has been playing tons. We're in this stretch of multiple games in short periods of time. You've got to get some of these guys some rest at some point in order to, you know, try and avoid even more injuries like we've seen so far. And to just be rested for the rest of the season. But I'll be honest, like when we got the lineup, I was kind of like, all right, well, maybe we can hope for a draw.
Well, so a couple of things to point out here. So the starting lineup, there was some hope when we first got a hold of it that it was going to feature Jordan Adebayo-Smith along with Deion Harris playing up front together. And unfortunately, that's not actually how that lineup got played in practice.
No.
Steinberger ended up being a striker in that game, technically speaking, with Harris playing as an outside mid. And it, I'm not saying that's the error, but I'm not going to say it. I don't think that was necessarily a good call. Here's something to consider. We switched to a four in the back against Miami, knowing that Miami is a team that has a lot of speed and is a team that likes to press. It was clearly a response to the opposition that we were up against. We said it once before. When we played against Phoenix, my comment at the end of that game was, if we play Phoenix again, that game is not happening the same way it did. Why? Dos Santos got an early ball down the wing, muscled a defender out of the way, crossed the ball in, and there was an own goal. Automatically, that's going to throw out the result as being something that you can look to and build off of, and I mean, to a certain extent, and as far as expectations for the next game go. In this match, Antley's error meant that everything that we had planned for the evening, all the good mojo, all the mentality that we had built going into that match was gone immediately. What's amazing about this is that despite – despite the Tampa Bay Rowdies going down 1-0, we turn right around and have the next two best scoring chances in the match. Mm-hmm. You have a shot that goes off the post. You have another shot that you know, it's you know, off frame, but it's close. You know, two good build-ups. Working down the left-hand side, Lawrence White being very involved in both of them. Leo Fernandez being very involved in both of them. If that game goes 1-1, I don't, you know, how does the rest of this match go? So, you know, it's interesting questions about, like, did the formation change work? Was this the right formation change? Was this, did we have the personnel and the right decisions? We almost did. We almost did. You could almost make an argument that the opportunity was there. The guys just didn't execute on the chances that they had been given.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Miami then gets a second goal. Othello Ball gets one in the 34th minute. At that point, at that point, it's interesting because the rest of the half, we do nothing. Okay. But what's fascinating about the match is when you look at the giveaways, the free giveaways that we had, Connor Antley accounted for at least three indescribably bad giveaways. Two of them beyond the one that he gave that led to the goal. Jordan Adebayo-Smith gave up possession twice under no pressure. Lawrence White gave up possession once with no pressure. Steinberger gave one up with no pressure. Those were all first half plays that just, like, nothing. That first half, because we weren't able to finish one of those shots, one of those opportunities, becomes, by default, one of the worst halves this season. If not the worst half of soccer this team has put together in maybe even a year and a half. Neil Collins goes in and makes a triple sub at halftime.
Line change.
The man he wanted to give a break to ends up coming on the field. Sebastian Gonzatti. We make a sub in the midfield. Jan Ecker comes in. We also bring in Sebastian Dalgaard and then rework the lineup. Go back to the traditional three in the back. Because Antley comes out after having one of the worst halves of soccer I've seen in a while, which I feel bad for him. 2019 USL League One Defender of the Year, and a year and a half later, he has one of the worst halves of soccer probably in his life. Deion Harris comes out, which was an interesting decision. And Zach Steinberger comes out, something that I would have advocated for. He's not a striker. He proved that last year. Why do we still put him up there?
Although I at least I respect that he, because I noticed this watching it. I don't know if you guys could see it or if it stood out as like as obvious in the stadium as it did on TV. He tried to recreate his goal in Louisville.
Oh yeah,
and almost pulled it off.
Almost.
And yeah, it would have been worth it just for that, but it didn't.
But in 45 minutes, that's the only positive contribution he had.
Well, yeah.
In a 45-minute shift. I mean, realistically, that was the peak of his night, was that one, potential kick of the ball. You know, like, he, to be fair to him, he also had a part in the build-up to the shot that went off the post. But still, like, it was just, I don't know. We make the change, and all of a sudden, the game is completely different. Now, granted, Miami also takes their foot off the gas a little bit, playing more of the just the long balls, you know, up and over, trying to see if they can't catch us on a weird transition. So the game is wildly different at that point. We get one back on a Leo Fernandez missile. That goal was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
I'm thinking about going to practice just to see if he can recreate that, because I could use a haircut. And if he could just put that right on the side of my head, I think it would take just enough off. That was a thing of beauty.
That was absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. And unfortunately, that's where the rally ends.
Yep.
We had several more opportunities. Several more. The keeper made several very good saves.
Oh, he had a heck of a night.
Defenders on Miami had some decent blocks. Mm-hmm. Overall, I thought in the end, it should have been a draw.
I mean, if you look at the stats, like especially one telling one, the one we've been screaming about for I don't know, the entire season, it feels like, is shots from distance. Rowdy's had 17 total shots, 7 of them from outside the box, but also 7 of those were blocked. And then we'll talk about it later, but 10 shots inside the box, but only 3 on target.
Three shots on target officially again.
Woof. Woof.
It's just not...
You guess what my ugly is already?
Yeah, very, very, very... Very odd, frustrating game, to be sure. So let's take a look at a couple things. Like I said, I don't think it's fair to look at the starting 11 and go, Neil, what are you doing? Well, what he's doing is trying to get us out of a slump that we've been in for like 6 or 7 games in a row now.
Right.
I have absolutely no fault in the man for trying to change things up, making some formational changes, a bit of a change in tactics, because that comes naturally when you're making a change in your formation, having some player personnel shuffle around. Like, that's what you're supposed to do in a slump like what we're dealing with. I have no problems with that. None at all. I think in this match, it all has to do with the fact that the players just didn't play well in the first half. You know, one of the things that we were at the stadium and we were looking around and watching how Miami was playing, especially in that first half, they were all over us. The moment they lost possession, they're in our face. But we're not returning the favor. You know, their defenders get the ball, you know, maybe it was played up over the top too far. And our guys like Steinberger and Jordan Adebayo Smith are walking around. Yeah, they get the ball. Okay, we'll just do it. No. Our bread and butter has been playing high pressure style. Miami's doing it against you, and you're literally just letting them walk all over you. You know, it was a really bizarre match. And I will say this too. Switching from the 3-5-2 when you have two defensive midfielders to a 4-4-2 when you've only got one, you could tell that our guys in that first half did not really know who had what assignments and where you were supposed to be positioned. Because on several of those plays, Forrest or Jordan got caught in no man's land because they weren't sure if they should press up into the midfield to help out, you know, a player that's not being marked because Lewis is on you know, the ball side of the field, leaving an extra midfielder in the middle. Maybe an outside midfielder came in, maybe a forward dropped, you know, into that midfield space. And people like Forrest and Jordan are just stuck in this no man's land because they're not really sure if they're supposed to press in and help out in that scenario or just leave it on the back line and keep the shape overall. Like, there were several moments where we were just not sure what to do. And credit to Miami, you know, for playing the high press and not giving us a chance to fall into that groove and kind of figure it out as we were playing. Do I think a 4-4-2 is the answer going forward to get us out of a slump against teams that are a high press? Maybe. I'm not going to say that it was wrong. I'm not going to dismiss the idea. Like I said, I think criticizing Neil for that decision, I think, is wrong. Because I don't have a problem with the decision overall.
The result, obviously, but yeah, not the decision. It was rough, but it was one of those, you know. And Neil has said this before in press conferences. It's not realistic to expect that you're going, like, you go into each match expecting to put the effort in to win, but to conceivably think you're going to win every single match isn't going to happen. But the difference between that first half and that second half were night and day. If they had played the entire game that they played the second half, that's easily a draw.
Yeah.
And look, you've got, and I don't want to hop all into this just yet, because I was kind of saving it for later. You know, there is the issue about guys being injured, although I think that's kind of being overblown at this point, for various reasons. But also, what's maybe more accurate to look at is you still got, you know, guys like Wyke and Ekra who are working their way back in and are still working their way probably back to match fitness at this point. Like, Wyke putting a shot off the post, not entirely surprising. The guy's been out injured for a couple games and is getting back into the groove. But, man, if you just could have played with the urgency of the second half. And maybe the urgency doesn't appear until you're down 2-0. But yeah, seeing guys just kind of, you know, letting the game happen around them, you know, I wondered for a few minutes is it a case of, well, we know the defense has been so good, we don't necessarily have to attack everybody with the ball with this kind of urgency because the defense is going to be there to clean it up. Well, it's going to happen sometimes when the defense isn't there or the defense has a poor night. And we saw it. We saw what happens. Like Neil has said before, talking about some of these games, is, you know, you don't take anyone for granted. You don't underestimate anyone. But at this point, I think we're starting to overestimate ourselves. And that's a trap that we're kind of fallen into.
You know what? That's an interesting point, and I like that. I do agree with that point. One thing that I will also say here, last comment from me. Neil in the post-game press conference took the blame. You know, he as the head coach, decided to shoulder the blame. He's not going to throw players under the bus. It's not his style. And he said, yeah, you know, look, we didn't come out strong. That was a very rough first 45. I'll take the blame for that. That's on me as the coach for not preparing the guys. And while I applaud him for doing that, I also don't think he needs to commit that bit of act of seppuku there. Because it's, like I said, I didn't think going out in that formation was the problem. I don't even think specifically the personnel was necessarily the problem. I think you just had one player with a catastrophically bad game that threw the whole thing into a mess.
And you have a team in the Rowdies who has not played from behind that much this season, even during this slump. They've only been behind for short parts of the game, unfortunately, at the end, and is not used to being in this situation and wasn't really in that situation a lot last year either. Yeah. So maybe doesn't have the mentality or the experience yet to to work their way out of it. I mean, I kind of felt after that Leo Fernandez goal, you know, we still had about 25 minutes plus stoppage left, that there would be a fairly decent chance that we could get another one back and get a draw. And it didn't happen.
It didn't, but legitimately it almost did. Like I said, we had eight shots after that goal was scored. Five of those ended up being blocks. Three of them were off frame. And I think one of them was the very last minute of the game when Lewis Hilton tried to chip from like half field, which I thought was hilarious. And I applauded him for it. Cause you never know if you happen to hit it right and you catch a keeper out, maybe he's not reading it and you get a cheeky goal. I'm cool with it, whatever. But you know, I applaud the effort. It was there. It's unfortunate that we didn't get the point, but I mean, realistically, the only complaint that I have is I would have preferred Deion Harris up front with Jordan. I still don't understand the purpose of having Steinbrecher up there on the front line. When, after, a couple seasons now, has Steinbrecher ever seriously contributed as a striker on this team? When he's played the position in games, going like five or six times now? I mean, he's legitimately going back like 2.5-3 seasons. He has been a starting striker at least five or six times with this past weekend's match. And in all of those games, I'm pretty sure his contribution has been about zero. I don't know of many shots he ever gets. It's just, it's not his role. It's not his position.
Right.
You know, I don't necessarily know if he's a great attacking mid, because I don't know if our system really, you know, uses cams the correct way. But, you know, I think if that's the one thing that I don't get, is I would have preferred Harris to be up top with Jordan. Because think about it this way, right? If Juan Tejada is healthy, then Juan Tejada gets in that spot. What does Juan Tejada do the most? He relentlessly runs at and attacks opposing defenders. That's his bread and butter. It's a high press. He does not stop. Well, that's what like Deion Harris would be if Deion Harris was in that role, or at least that's what I would be directing him to do. In which case, I don't understand why we're not doing that, because if Tejada's healthy, then that's what's on the field, and that's the style of play that it is. So it's just one of those. That's the decision to me that I thought was strange, overall. But unfortunately, it is what it is. They have lost. It's the fourth loss in five games.
Fourth and five, three in a row. Last time, I had to go look this up to make sure. The last time we lost three in a row, Neil Collins became the head coach. And I'm not saying that as saying that, you know, that he should be
don't
on the hot seat or something.
Don't you put those bad mojos.
But just to say, like, that's how long ago it's been.
Yeah.
You know, kind of in some uncharted territory for Neil's term as a head coach. Luckily, we're going to get to it in a few minutes. The antidote may be arriving this weekend. May just be. So a couple other notes from this game. Aaron Guillen got the only yellow card, puts him on three. I thought that might have been his. I thought we might have some players on four. We still don't have anybody on four, so we're like way down in the league in terms of yellow cards and fouls this year, which is kind of interesting.
Little bum that nobody's taken a cheap shot at Paco Craig yet. By the way.
You know, I thought we might get something. I thought, especially when this was like 2-0, I thought we might see something at that point. Didn't quite happen. I don't remember. Actually, I don't think I was on last week's show. I don't think I made a prediction about this one. I'm sure I did in the pregame show, I guess, probably. I think I predicted 2-1. I don't remember. No. We didn't do pregame. It's a away game, and we had some other stuff. I don't remember. I don't think we made predictions on this. So we're not. None of us are taking the L there. Enough L's were taken on Saturday. We're not gonna run this up.
Exactly.
But the good, the bad, and the ugly. So the good, I got a couple here. Number one, even though I didn't get to do it, we got to have fans go to the stadium.
Yes, sir.
Like we got an in-state away day, which was good. The bad, there weren't a whole lot of other people besides the mob fans who made the trip that were there. Like, this is how bad it was. You know, Pendleton posted his attendance graphic this week, which showed Miami announcing 723 fans in attendance, and I was like, if you added about 500,
yeah,
because there's no way.
We physically counted like 250 people, like in the building as far as fans go.
Like, so I remember last year, because I remember this, the first Miami Tampa game, Tampa Bay game, is when the shutdown happened and everyone went into quarantine. And I distinctly remember getting a refund for my ticket. And then I got an email this year saying, hey, you still have credit from last year's game if you want to use it to come. I think maybe they added in a bunch of just extra tickets of people that they said had credit, because I know I wasn't there.
Yeah, that I'm not surprised that not a lot of people were there, but, you know, especially considering that Inter Miami's in, and even though they're terrible, and, you know, we're coming off of a pandemic, so Miami FC is not quite on the forefront of anybody's sporting minds at the moment. But, you know, it just, that's going to be a tough market to recover in post, you know, post pandemic. It's going to be it's going to be a little interesting to see how the health of that franchise is in the long run.
Speaking of terrible, Inter Miami is currently down 4-0 at halftime to New England in Fort Lauderdale. But yeah, that was something I was talking about with somebody on Twitter earlier today, is, you know, this was the very first time since they've joined the league that Miami's been allowed to have fans in stadiums.
Yeah.
All the games last year were shut down and they've just reopened now. And, you know, you had the situation where Inter Miami was allowed to bring fans in before Miami FC, and you know, one of the Miami FC, you know, kind of flexed their muscle with their legal muscle contractually to hold on to their spot as the primary tenant in the stadium, and it ends up kind of backfiring in on them and hurting them in the long run, because Inter Miami's had fans, and sure, they're awful, but you know, there's all the rumors going around that Messi was going to be at the game tonight because he's in Miami, and I don't think that he's at the game. I haven't seen that post yet, but you know, they've been able to have fans there, and I don't know how Miami FC digs out of this at this point, out of this hole, like, unless they go and sign Messi at this point. Yeah. But, you know, knowing that area, because I grew up down there, I don't know. It's going to be a rough situation for them. And then my ugly, And you might have seen this one already, because I went and made like specific notes in the show notes for this. This is very ugly. Just the Rowdies offense.
Yeah.
Offensively, just terrible. And I went and looked at some other stats that I don't normally look at and saw some interesting things. Didn't see any answers. Don't have any clues for how you fix this other than get guys back from injury. But after starting out the year with like 10 goals in the first, you know, three games or four games or something like that, Tampa Bay is now tied for 10th in goals in the entire league with 18. And we're closer to the bottom, which is currently Oakland Roots with 7 goals in a very limited number of games, than we are the top. Phoenix is way up there with 31 at this point. The Rowdies are tied for 13th in conversion rate, 15%. And again, closer to the bottom, against this weekend's opponent, Loudoun, who only has an 8% conversion rate, than the team at the top, Hartford, with a 25% conversion rate. Looking again specifically at this weekend, why I'm kind of holding out some hope, Rowdies are 6th in the league overall in total shots. Loudoun 3rd, might seem like a weird thing to be optimistic for, but we'll get into more reasons why shortly. Rowdy's also had the fourth most passes, but are 12th in accuracy. So, I mean, it bears out right there. Like, and they've become kind of conscientious the last few games about taking more shots, but now it's getting them on target, getting them in the net. And everyone likes to, you know, point at, you know, Dos Santos and Kusana and Tejada, and you know, we still have never seen Luis Fernando yet, and say, look, we've got so many guys injured. Out of those four, the only one that was in the lineup at the start of the season was Steven Dos Santos.
Yep.
You can't keep pointing at the injuries and saying that's the problem. It's part of the problem. Another part is that it feels like we're still trying to play like he's out there, pushing the ball out wide, looking for the extra pass, trying to cross it in and hope he, you know, gets on the end of it. You know, we saw when Matthew Serbel started in that kind of attacking midfield role, and he made more an effort to play through the middle and to lead the attack through the middle, that it created some new opportunities we hadn't seen before. And until we have Dos Santos back, and it sounds like, you know, we keep hearing closer and closer, maybe this weekend, maybe next week, next game, we might see, you know, guys like Tejada and Mkosana showing up on the bench, maybe Fernando. I think Dos Santos is still a little bit further out. That was a broken foot bone. That's going to be a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that man, that is, it is rough right now. It is rough. Do you have a man of the match? Like, you were there. We know who the man of the match wasn't. Do you have a pick for who it was? Do you have a stand? I mean, Leo's goal was incredible. Amazing.
You know, I'm gonna do something a bit odd here for that. I'm actually going to say Sebastian Gonzatti. And the reason why is you could tell immediately in that second half when he came on the field, the different dynamic that he poses to an opposing team. Because he is more involved. And, you know, when you start to looking at skill of different players, you know, again, like Steinberger is not the greatest, you know, striker on the planet. That's not his bread and butter. You know, it just is what it is, right? He's normally our starting attacking midfielder. He's not a striker by trade. But there was such a difference between what Steinberger was doing up there compared to what Gonzatti did the moment he hit the field, that I think that there was an attitude shift when Seba got on the field. I think the style of play changed. And I think the reason why we were able to kind of open up the field a little bit and kind of get a bit more confidence in that second half, I think has a lot to do with him. So I'm going to give him the man of the match because I think his leadership and his style of play is what turned things around and gave us a chance at getting a point.
All right. Sounds good. Other results in the Atlantic Division from last week. Pittsburgh defeated Loudoun 1-0. Charleston 3-1 over Hartford. We got some upcoming games this week. Nothing tonight, but on Friday night, Red Bull 2 will be hosting Pittsburgh. Charleston and Charlotte will be facing off. And on Saturday, Hartford will host Miami. Hartford had kind of a shock loss. And Hartford's got some interesting things going on that might affect the outcome of that game. So our current standings. The Rowdies are still on top of the Atlantic Division, but now just on goal difference with them and Pittsburgh level on 24 points. The Rowdy, actually, I think we're still using the same tiebreaker. I think the first tiebreaker is overall wins, which the Rowdies have one more win over Pittsburgh's 8-7 and would hold the a +4 difference in goal differential. The Rowdies with a +7, Pittsburgh with a +3. But the Rowdies no longer have the most points in the entire USL. Louisville in the Eastern Conference has 26. Phoenix has 26 as well. You've got a couple other teams with 24 over in the Western Conference. El Paso and Rio Grande Valley. So kind of falling into that, you know, bottom of the upper tier, top of the middle tier, however you want to call it. Miami jumps up to third, only a point behind with 23 points. They've now won three in a row and have not lost in their last five. Hartford still above the cut line, would make the playoffs if the playoffs started today with 20 points. And then your bottom four in the Atlantic Division, Charlotte has 16, Charleston has 15, New York Red Bull 2 with 13, and Loudoun with 11 points. Two wins and 10 losses. Let's just go for an even, uneven 11. Let's just do that this weekend. We'll get there. All right, some club news. So the Rowdies were playing Loudoun on Saturday night at Al Lang, as usual. But the first Academy game will be on Sunday at Al Lang. I had heard whispers of possibly being moved to like earlier in the morning in hopes of avoiding like either very hot or very rainy weather. And those proposals were not agreed to by the opposition. So the game will take place at 2 p.m. Admission is free. It's going to be streamed online. I can't remember if they said it's going to be on the Twitch channel or if it's going to be somewhere else. I'm either going to stay in St. Pete Saturday night and then go over to the game and come back home after that, or I'm just going to come home, get up, and turn around and go back up to St. Pete. I want to go watch the Academy game on Sunday. That should be fun. Now we got like the meat of the show because everyone decided to drop some news in the last day or two. Some league news. Number one, mentioned earlier, Hartford's got some stuff going on. Their head coach and their assistant coach have both tested positive for COVID and are in quarantine and will not be available for this weekend's game where they host Miami. Instead, their technical director / former assistant coach will be taking over the team for the game. As of right now, everybody else in the squad has tested negative, but you know, we got a couple days left. We'll see what happens. The big thing, Steven, I know you were upset and pleased by this because you got information, even though part of it, the good news, bad news for Open Cup is that the Open Cup for this year once again has been called off. The longest non-running cup competition in the world with 2 years in a row of not running. However, they have published the dates, the plan, everything for 2022, assuming, you know, a year ago we thought everything would be fine for 2021. Here we are, not quite there yet. So they put it out there for 2022, which going back to the plan they kind of had for 2020, where they were going to have, you know, 100 plus clubs competing. I'm going to let you talk about it because I know the Open Cup is your thing. A couple of things I noted. The first round proper will begin March 22nd, March 23rd. So roughly around the start of the season, the USL season, but that's not when USL clubs usually join. They weren't specific about this on the U.S. soccer website. Usually USL comes in round two, which is going to be beginning of April, April 5th through the 7th. And then round three, part of MLS is going to come in, and then the other part's going to come in, I believe, in round four. Steven, your thoughts, first off, on the cancellation and then also the proposed plan for now for 2022.
So it's a mixed bag because there are good things and bad things that I like about this. Overall, in terms of what the announcement held. For one thing, I hate not having another National League Cup. Like, come on, guys. I just don't get why. Well, okay, let me back up. The announcement says they went ahead and called off a truncated 2021 Open Cup because they were having difficulty finding available match days amongst all the participating leagues for a fall schedule. Is there truth behind that? I don't know. We were already talking a really truncated Open Cup. So the fact that we're willing to scrap the entire thing and not just do and like really small number of teams. I mean, can you call it a National League Cup if, say, only like 8 teams are involved or 12 teams or whatever, like 16, I guess. You know, can you call it that? I don't know, maybe. But if you're already willing to truncate it just to get it to go on in the first place, I don't know why over the last 4 months, we couldn't figure out a way to get a truncated thing figured out for the fall. Originally, the reason that they went ahead and shut down the truncated schedule was because of COVID concerns. You know, the vaccines weren't widespread. There was a lot of concern about communities that hadn't kind of fully reopened yet and how that would work with quarantining procedures and things like that. But, you know, in a lot of ways, we're kind of almost beyond that to a certain extent when it comes to professional sports franchises, because these guys are all vaccinated for the most part. The vast majority of them are. So at this point, it just kind of feels like it was a let's just not bother because nobody cares kind of thing. That's what it feels like at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what sucks. Now, the good news is, and this is what I really, really, really like, is the fact that we have all the dates for 2022 already. That is awesome. You know, FA Cup has schedules out for you know what weekends are going to be FA Cup rounds a year in advance. You know what weekends you have off for those. And the same should be true here. Like, Open Cup should reserve all of the dates that they need to reserve first. And all the leagues should be working around that and not the other way around. Because 9 times out of 10, it feels like it's the other way around every single year. So I'm very, very, very happy that we have a full schedule for next year. That part I love. Now, you're right in the sense that the only downfall is we don't specifically know when the USL teams are coming in. Now, you can kind of deduce a little bit because we know that Major League Soccer teams, the first group of them, are going to appear in the third round. That was part of the announcement. So we know that USL teams are probably coming in on the second round. I would anticipate. I think that's a fair assessment. I think you're going to see USL League 2. You're going to see like NISA, maybe even USL League 1. They'll probably all jump in on the first round.
Right.
You know, NPSL, UPSL, whatever word acronym spaghetti O thing you want to come up with. You know, they're all going to jump in on the first round. USASA, all that kind of stuff. I would imagine USL Pro probably jumps in second round, and then, you know, those winners and such start playing MLS teams starting in the third round.
Right.
I think it makes sense. I think that's what I would anticipate at this point. But I love this. I absolutely love this. There is no wondering when the weekend is. I can now put in a vacation time right now.
Of course. All dates and everything, as usual, is subject to change. But yeah, it's kind of cool to at least know in advance. And one thing they pointed out, that round one is happening the same weekend as a USA-Mexico World Cup qualifier, which if they like actually promote that and market it and maybe broadcast it properly, could work. What else you got, Steven?
There's one other thing that really sucks, though. The broadcast agreement for 2022's Open Cup has now changed. On the announcement, it said that ESPN Plus will be the home for the 2022 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, including the final. Including the final.
So it doesn't get to big ESPN.
Doesn't get ESPN2, doesn't get ESPNU, which is almost a downgrade. You know, it doesn't get simulcast on ESPN Deportes,
right,
or anything. It is just going to be an online stream on ESPN Plus. Way to promote the tournament, guys. You're gonna have you're going to be able to get this thing scheduled 14 months in advance of the date of the final for 2022. It's scheduled to be either September 6th and 7th or September 13th, 14th, depending on, you know, schedules of the involved teams. And you can't make sure it's going to go on a national television 14 months in advance.
They're going to be busy. They got some stuff going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So, mixed bag. I'm ticked about this year. I think it sucks. I think it's stupid. I still think that USL should be able to participate in the early rounds of the CONCACAF Champions League. The play-in results that the Canadian teams get to participate in. I fully believe that USL should have one berth for that. But, you know, again, that's a whole other discussion, but I will maintain that to the day I die.
All right, the next one. This is going to be like the meat of the episode here. Like we've cut down the preview because it's maybe loud. Very good friend of the show, frequent guest. I thought about calling him to bring him in to try and talk about this tonight, but I figured it might be a little short notice and didn't want to try and put that on him. And plus, I could see us going on for like 45 minutes just off this article. The Athletic's Jeff Reuter dropped. I'm starting to refer to these as like USL news bombs. USL had a board meeting today, the first ever joint meeting between representatives of clubs in the championship and clubs in League One, not including any representatives from any of the MLS affiliated reserve 2B teams, whatever you want to call it, to discuss what they're going to do when a bunch of these teams up and disappear. And at this point, the line seems to be that all of the MLS 2 teams are going away, almost all, are going away after this year to go to MLS's new Division 3 league. 4 teams will remain for next year, but on the condition that next year is their last year in USL. Those are LA Galaxy 2, Atlanta United, New York Red Bulls, and trying to find the last one here before now you can just tell that I'm treading water. Where is it at? There's one other one. I don't see it right here in front of me. I'll have to keep looking around for it. I know it was an Eastern Conference one. There's 3 of them in the Eastern Conference, 1 in the Western Conference being LA Galaxy. So those teams would be around for next year. Here we go. Atlanta United, DC United, so Loudoun. The LA Galaxy and New York Red Bull 2 would remain in the USL Championship for 2022. Signed agreements on the condition that 2022 will be their final USL season. So we know there's new teams coming in the form of Queensboro. We know there's new teams coming in Monterey Bay. There's one for each of the conferences. But there's going to have to be some more, either more expansion or some more rearranging going on from there. There's also a proposal to establish a USL Championship / League. Well, actually, first off, 2 things involving the Championship and League One interacting. Number one, pro rel between League One and Championship, and also a form of a League Cup between the two leagues. So you would have some more games between those two. And now that there's an Open Cup schedule, I don't know if they're planning on doing this, you know, next year at least. A lot of this stuff, there seems to be a target date of have it in action by 2026 when the World Cup returns to United States, Canada, and Mexico in hopes of, you know, being a little bit higher profile, drumming up some more interest at that point. Also, and all of these things they said are things that they have you know, potentially kicked around, but has, because of MLS's involvement in USL with the 2 teams, it's always been kind of shut down. The MLS sides haven't been in fans of any of these ideas. The next one, this is a big one, which sounds a lot because it's like, it sounds kind of crazy. Everyone looks at Pro Rel as a big one, but USL has proposed switching to a European-style calendar, like a fall to spring calendar with a winter break and a second shorter preseason, kind of like what Germany does. I don't know if we'll call it winter pause like Germany does, but I just kind of like the name of it. We can figure it out from there. And also the talks are progressing, I guess, more advanced, at least with Konami, about having USL included in what used to be called Pro Evo football or something like that. Pro Evo soccer. And now it's
Pro Evolution Soccer.
Except as of today, it is now called Konami eFootball, which I think is kind of a lame name. Like, Pro Evo Soccer is a lot more fun. All right, so let's kind of break this down bit by bit. The first part I call MLS exit with, or as it looks like the notes, ML sexit. All of the two teams, exiting the league over, between this year and after next season and heading off to. And that's just not just the ones in the championship, but you've got Toronto FC2 and I think there's one or two others that are in League One that would be exiting as well. So There's going to be a need to bring in more clubs there to make that stable, or maybe you involuntarily relegate some of the championship clubs down there to boost the numbers. I don't know how they decide to do that. The partnership between USL and MLS has had its benefits, but also having, especially we see this a lot here in the East, it feels like a large chunk of games being against teams that, Red Bulls have historically competed well. LA Galaxy 2 has competed well, like Real Salt Lake's reserve team has competed well, but a lot of these teams have just, they're not there for the competition. They're there for the experience. And it casts a bit of a shadow on the image of the league. It casts a little bit of a shadow on attendance for some of these games when they travel to some of the independent clubs. On one hand, I believe there should be plenty of development opportunities, but if MLS is going to take this on with their D3 league, then cool, have at it. They're apparently going to work in some independent leagues. Maybe I think Rochester has been rumored to be bringing Jamie Vardy's boys down to that area. Cool, because I think in the end, it's addition by subtraction. I think it improves at least the integrity of the league overall in terms of competition. What are your thoughts on MLS exit?
Well, for one thing, I don't think it's specific. I'm torn on this. It goes against what the reason was for why MLS originally partnered with USL, which was an in-house closed reserve league doesn't work for development because the guys don't have meaningful minutes against competition, and that was the reason why they decided to join USL in the first place. So going from that to essentially what's going to be at start another closed reserve league is, it doesn't really make sense to me in the end. So I'm not really sure what that is. Let's face it, it's not really about development of players. It's all about money. They don't want to they don't want to share funds. They want to create a league that has, the potential for, the Jamie Vardy independent ownerships to come in and give them more franchise money. That's all it is. It's MLS wanting to collect that franchise fee. That's all it is. What's the noteworthy things, though, are the dates involved. So it says that almost all of these teams are gone after this season.
Mm-hmm.
And only a couple of them are going to be around for a maximum 1 year longer. So 2022 and 2023 are going to look wildly different.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, that's a short turnaround time. We've only been in this league what, 2017 was our first season. So realistically, this is our fourth year in the league, and the entire league is going to change after this year. And if you think about it, this year and last year are COVID years. So we've only really played two normal seasons of USL soccer, and the entire thing is basically blowing up. So that's
American soccer. You gotta love it.
Gotta love American soccer. So that's one notable thing. The other item that they were talking about was that this ProRel idea would not come in until, I think they said 2026.
The goal was to have the stuff in place by 2026. It could be earlier, but the ProRel thing is something that they're actually going to bring up and vote on at the like annual meetings this year.
And the reason for that is because you've got all of these teams that are exiting. And so you need to start creating plans because, you know what, a third of your combined league when it comes to USL Championship and USL League One, like a third of all your franchises are about to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to come up with a plan very quickly on how you're going to structure your leagues moving forward. Now, granted, we're really, really close. Again, depending on which of the USL Championship and League One teams are considered the independents and which ones are considered, you know, truly MLS reserve teams, because there are some teams that straddle that line where it's like players are one guy and, you know, the ownership group is something else. And so you get some like weird combinations around the country. But, you know, so it'd be interesting to see where the dust finally settles on all of them. But, you know, by and large, when you count expansions coming up in the next couple of years, you're at about 40 combined teams between the two divisions of independent clubs. Now, that being said, that also includes teams like Miami, who had 700 people show up as announced attendance. That's including teams like Rio Grande Valley that have nobody. That includes teams like Austin, who has nobody. Charlotte, who has nobody. Charleston, who's trying to kind of rebuild their brand a little bit, but at the moment basically have nobody. There's a lot of franchises around USL where there's not much of a fan base. So optimistically, we have 40 teams still around by the time we kick off in 2023. Would a 20 team, you know, ProRel two division system work? Hey, if they can make the finances work, then yeah, go. Because again, for me, it's all about finance fees. It's all about franchise fee agreements. If you paid a certain amount of money to compete in USL Championship and you're getting relegated, you better have some parachute payments involved. But if you are a USL League One team like Greenville Triumph and you get promoted, well, you better put some more money in the pot, because those championship teams, they had to pay some extra funds to be playing at that level. You chose not to. You shouldn't get rewarded financially for taking the lower division and now getting to play in the higher one later, a few years later.
Something else they're going to have to work out, and this is probably where another part of this five-year timeline comes in, is if you're going to do this kind of institute, kind of this ProRel between Championship and League One, you've got to change the professional league standards.
Yep.
Because these teams that are playing in League One do not have, you know, the ownership most likely and the stadium meet the stadium requirements that that would be in place currently for second division teams. So there's got to be some kind of modification to the PLS as well.
Not to mention, if you think about this too, Division Two has standards on what your metro sizes are.
Mm-hmm.
How is that going to work if Greenville wins, you know, third division and gets promoted, quote unquote, to second? How do you do that? Their metro doesn't qualify, technically speaking.
You either modify the PLS or you could try and get an exemption for 1 year and hope they get relegated again, I guess.
That would be funny.
Just like rolling exemptions every year for whoever gets promoted, and kind of on the idea that, yeah, they're going to get knocked down or something. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they resolve that one. That's going to have to be something that, you know, I assume USL is going to have to negotiate between themselves and U.S. Soccer, and probably bring up at a U.S. Soccer AGM and have this proposal voted on to modify this.
In which case, I'm fully anticipating U.S. Soccer to be a jerk in the whole process and say no.
I mean, U.S. Soccer will just kind of stand there with their hands up and say, oh, why don't you guys figure something else out? The League Cup idea is another interesting concept.
I like
especially it. Nowadays with the champion, a lot of championship sides either having or starting an academy system. It's another area where maybe some of these kids could even get a chance to play in some of those competitions, to give them a chance and a little bit, you know, step up the competitiveness a little bit from what they're getting in USL Academy League. Now they're going to maybe get to go against a League One side in a League Cup game or something like that. It's another, you know, stone in the path of development, which I think is kind of cool. I'm in favor of that. I'm good with it. The one that seems to be getting the most commentary, at least online from when we posted this earlier, is switching to a Euro calendar, where they would start playing in the fall and finish up in the spring, as opposed to what we do now with spring into the fall. Steven, you're already shaking your head. Kind of the main thing explained for this would have to do with USL's kind of, I don't want to say realignment, but they've kind of made themselves or developed themselves into more of a, hey, let's try and get some of our top younger prospects, you know, attention in Europe and let's try and increase some sales and transfers, and putting yourself on that same calendar is one way to do it. I saw some other people online explaining, you know, in multiple tweet threads, how in order to make Pro Rel work, you'd have to have this kind of situation in place also. I have to go back and find those to get the whole explanation. I don't have it off the top of my head. It's interesting. It's one thing that a lot of people have called for MLS is to align with that kind of schedule. The biggest issue that you run into it here with is no matter what, like right now we start in spring and finish in the fall, which means about halfway through the season, it's June, July, August, kind of September, you start getting some really, really hot temperatures in the south. Switching to this calendar, you would kind of avoid that, which is nice, but now you're playing more games. Even though, like, you know, there's not a ton of details on it, if you're going to include this winter break, well, you've got teams in places like Minnesota and Madison, Wisconsin, and some of these northern spots that have some pretty serious winter weather. Like, how long is this winter break going to be? Is it going to be months? Is you know, that kind of feels like it's going to hurt your momentum. It's going to hurt your... It could possibly be detrimental to you know, your team development, even though you would come back and have a kind of brief preseason before coming back from the break. I don't know. It's a lot easier to run the schedule we have now because it's easier to play in the heat than it is to play in the cold and in the snow. We can play in the rain and the everything else, and we've kind of learned to live with it. What are your thoughts, Stephen? I can tell you're not a fan, but let me hear some of the reasons why.
This didn't work for NISA. This doesn't work for the NASL. These ideas of running split season schedules is ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. The idea that somehow USL is going to go to a winter schedule and that's going to allow us to be able to sell players in the middle of a year overseas. No, I'm sorry. That's not going to happen. Very, very, very few clubs around the world give a crap about any of the players on this level. Very, very few. And the ones that do play, you know, it's the Israeli Premier League, it's Norway, it's Iceland, it's Denmark. Not exactly top-tier talent. The fact that you're willing to shift your entire schedule for an entire league organization for the offhand chance that one player of hundreds might get picked up in a 10-year span by somebody is insane. Is absolutely insane. And you're not setting yourself up in a split season to pick up players that don't make MLS rosters.
Right.
Because MLS ain't changing their season, and the way that we have it set up right now is you get to pick up some of those guys that fall through the MLS cracks.
Mm-hmm.
You shift to a winner schedule and you lose that immediately. I don't get the reason why. There's no reason. This idea is bad, and it's so bad that according to Jeff Reuter's article, Jake Edwards didn't even brief the owners and the representatives of the franchises before he made the announcement. He had to sneak it into the Board of Governors meeting almost like it was made on a whim to an audience of half very confused people and a few that were like nodding their heads like, oh, yeah, you know, that's a good idea. Like, you know, the Oakland Roots owners have any say in the USL. I'm sorry. I had to throw their name in there. you know, like the idea is insane. It's outright stupid.
All right, I found the tweet about why you need to move move to the Euro calendar if you're going to do Pro Rel. And I'm just presenting this here without comment or I guess even context. If you don't align transfer windows, newly promoted and newly relegated teams are limited to the current domestic player market, which is entirely internal and likely doesn't see teams parting with players as easily. Basically, it would be more difficult, although teams have always managed to do this, bring in players from overseas for promoted and relegated teams because of the schedule difference.
That doesn't make sense. I don't See, here again, here's the problem. That fundamentally doesn't make sense. Because the idea being that if we play on a winner schedule, a team that gets promoted will go overseas to recruit players. Except that the problem with that is that you can't even build half of your roster using international signees.
Right.
So that idea fundamentally doesn't make sense. You're going to have to build a roster using the majority of players in the country already. Natural born citizens. So that comment does not make sense considering what the roster rules are right now.
Well, and that maybe that's something else that's up for discussion or negotiation when this comes, because both of these things, the two major things are Pro Rel and a calendar switch, would have to be voted on and approved by the clubs. So it's not like it's an imminent thing of it happening, but a vote could be coming up pretty soon, at least. Probably, let's see.
Yeah, they said December.
December 2021 for... let's see. In his presentation, Edwards set an objective to plan some major changes to USL's format, stated an aim to have a promotion relegation model between the USL's two pro leagues ready to vote on by the league's winter meetings, tentatively scheduled for December 2021, and then included the calendar shift proposal as well. So those are things that I guess could potentially both be voted on in 2020 at the end of 2021.
Yeah, so let's go back to this for 1 second. Think about this. You get promoted. We switch to a winter schedule. You get promoted in the fall. You build your roster with players to get started in the you get promoted in the spring, so you're getting ready for the fall season or start of the season in the fall. Your player base at that point are now, like, say there is an MLS player that slips through the cracks, right? He didn't get signed on to a team when that team was going through preseason and the beginning of the season in February, March. You're now going to be waiting months before he now goes into a new camp to be a part of your team. Because as it stands right now, if a team gets invited to an MLS camp in February, he's working out in February. Maybe that slips into March. Maybe. But then he doesn't get signed. They release him from camp. Now all the USL teams come chomping at the bits, looking to see if they can't pick him up. Guess what? The dude's already in shape. And the dude now fits right into your preseason, which you're also happen to be in the middle of. Which means when your team gets ready to go, they are too. But by running opposite, anybody that you sign domestically is now going to be inherently not in preseason shape when they join up with the rest of the team. Because those players will have been sitting down for, 6 months. I just don't get it. It does not make sense to do what they're thinking of. Essentially because the priorities are backwards. The other thing, of course, that was brought up in this, the Konami PES. It's cool. I mean, we've been talking about that for a long time. Notably, there was some game-breaking code that was happening in FIFA's system where the Tampa Bay Rowdies are present in the game code with FIFA, but it's not sure to what extent they're planning on using the name, because with their foot system, their FUT gameplay for stuff, you can do a lot of historical teams. And when you're doing the historical teams with historical players, sometimes you have to use the names of the clubs that they played in when you're doing their biographies and stuff like that. So it's not quite clear, some of these names that are popping up, like with the Tampa Bay Rowdies, more than likely that's the case. Now, that being said, wouldn't it be sick if you have players like Rodney Marsh in his Tampa Bay Rowdies days playing as a historical player in the game?
Yeah, it would be pretty cool. I think what I saw, the likely explanation is that it's something to do with Joe Cole being added or updated in the game, because Phoenix Rising's also included supposedly for Didier Drogba. So they have that in there, but it's a step. I did see, and I'm still, generations behind on consoles, but apparently in the next FIFA, in FIFA 22, you're going to be able to create your own club. So it's like, all right, let's start creating rowdies out here at this point and see what happens. I might have to go finally get an upgrade and do this.
Yeah, you can kind of already do it already. I mean, the Rowdies Gaming guys, when you can make like your own team already, like sort of kind of. So like that inherently already exists as it stands. I think the big change was that you could actually create a bit more of a customized home stadium or something like that. Like, granted, that's been something that they've talked about for years, but supposedly there's some talk that they might be expanding the programming for that. So we'll have to just kind of wait and see what that looks like.
All right, let's go. Let's wrap this up with a real quick preview of Loudoun. Look, they're one of the worst teams in the league. If Oakland had played more games, maybe they actually would qualify for this point. But right now, Loudon's pretty bad. Basically, Loudon's exactly what we need coming in here, as long as we don't overestimate ourselves. as I tweeted earlier, Loudoun and Tampa Bay, only two teams in USL Championship that have not drawn a game all year. It's either been a win or a loss. So, of course, this one, you know, that would seem to be setting you up for like a 1-1 draw. However, the only real notes I'm going to go over in terms of previewing Loudoun, number one, they've got two players on four yellow cards, so on an accumulation warning, next card, and they will be sitting out for some games. But yesterday it was announced that DC United has recalled Giovanni Bolivar, who was Loudoun United's leading scorer and leading shot taker. So, you know, Loudoun's up here with third most in shots. Well, their leading shooter has now been recalled to DC United, and their leading goal scorer has gone to him. In his place, they have loaned Eric Sorga, an Estonian forward who joined DC United prior to the 2020 season. Since then, he's had 20 appearances, 9 starts, and most notably scored the game-winning goal versus New York Red Bulls on September 2nd, 2020. His last appearance for DC United was on May 1st at San Jose, where he's played all 90 minutes. So their leading scorer has been called up and being replaced by a guy who has not played since the beginning of May, since, you know, kind of the end of spring, beginning of summertime here. So is eligible for selection on Saturday. Yes, please give me a guy on a late July evening who has not played since the beginning of May. Yes. Okay, cool. Let's go for it. Predictions. I'm going 2-0. I'd love to see, like, you know, a 4 or a 5 or something like that, but we're not there yet. We're not there. 2-0, and it'll feel very nice.
As far as predictions, I'm going to say that the Rowdies go back to a 3-5-2. Oh, yeah. I think we get the shutout, but I don't think we do more than one goal. Loudoun, for all the losses they've had, they've only had like 2 games, I think, where they've allowed, you know, a goal differential more than one. You know, it's a tough team to break down defensively, so I'm going to say 1-0, Tampa Bay Rowdies.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap this up. It's almost 9:30 already. Mm-hmm. Knew we were going to go a little bit long tonight, but we had a lot of news to go over.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about.
Thank you to Wolfface for the music, to Radio St. Pete for the platform, and to Shamrock, which I finally made a trip back to the other day to watch USA versus Canada. First time I've been in there since that time we did the secret show. Actually, I'm going back. So Saturday, come to Al Lang. Sunday, get up, come back to Al Lang, and then Sunday night is USA Jamaica quarterfinals for Gold Cup, so I'll be back at Shamrock again for that. My weekend has taken on a theme so far. Thank you to everybody who has listened either live or is listening to this in podcast. Please continue to share, subscribe, rate, and review. If you'd like to help us on an ongoing basis, there's our Patreon, patreon.com/unusedsubspod. Starting anywhere from $1 a month all the way up to 10, or you can choose to even go above that if you'd like. Best way to support the show on an ongoing basis, helps us pay for the cost, the monthly costs associated with the show, and the occasional costs for updating equipment, adding equipment, paying for tattoos. No, I didn't know. We're not really doing that. Maybe. And also, we've got a couple days left, about a week left. I think the 29th is the last day to nominate us for Creative Loafing's Best of the Bay. We're nominated all the time because all it used to be was everybody that got nominated got nominated. Well, they're doing it a little bit differently this year, and only the groups or the nominees, like the top 20 nominees, like the most getting their names in, and I'll put the link out there in a little bit to go and do that. Only the top 20 in each category progress on to the final round of voting. So finally, for once, it actually will be an honor just to be nominated, because it means we would at least be in the top 20. we traditionally have been nominated under Best Podcast and Best Internet Radio Show. So we'll put those links out there. And you can also go in and you can nominate Al Lang Stadium. You can nominate the Rowdies for things. There's all kinds of stuff out there. But please go ahead and do that. We'd love to be in the top 20, even if, you know, we just end up losing to someone from 102.5 because they are a giant radio station. That's what usually happens, but it'd be kind of cool to even just make that top 20 again. And then thank you, as always, to our sponsors, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. You can get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And if you're tired of the same old uniform and cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas, if you're looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Of course, this is a home game Saturday, so we will be on at 7 o'clock with the pregame show. Usually we recently we kind of been keeping hush on the special guests, sometimes because we haven't known until the day of the show, but we do know this one in advance because I ran into him after the last home game and chatted for a few minutes. Former fan favorite turned soccer super agent Jochen Graf will be joining us in studio. He's at all the games. He represents at least one of the Rowdies players. I think a couple, but he will be there. And we're going to talk more about what the transition from football player life to agent life has been like, and get caught up on what's going on with Jochen. Cool guy. Glad I got a chance to talk to him again. And he told me, he's like, he's been watching the pregame show. First of all, because he noticed this, you know, when we were out there on the field at first doing it in the corner and wondered what was going on. So was watching it and has been watching it since then, or at least parts of it, which is kind of cool to hear that he's doing that. So be like Jochen. Watch the pregame show. We'll have info about that coming up soon. Steven, it's been fun.
Yes, sir.
Let's call it a night. See you on Saturday at the stadium. As I frantically look for hotels that don't cost $250 a night, which there are very, very few.
Yeah, that's true. But it'll be nice to be back at home on a Saturday night. That's for sure.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Let's get that music going and let's get out of here.
All right. Have a good night, everyone, and go Rowdies.
See ya.